The fate of health care reform is headed to the Supreme Court.
Make it a working lunch. Listen to the Marketplace Midday Update podcast for the day's top business headlines. Subscribe on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
Good morning from APM American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Adrienne Hill, in for Jeremy Hobson. It's day one of Supreme Court arguments over President Barack Obama's health care reform law. 26 states are challenging the law, parts of which are already in place. We wanted to know how the health care law is affecting pocketbooks today. So we've got Marketplace's John Dimsdale with us now live from Washington, D.C. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Adrienne.
So how has healthcare spending changed since the passage of healthcare reform?
Well, we don't have a reliable measure of the costs since the law. That was 2010 when it was enacted. But we do know that the runaway medical inflation that we saw in the 1990s and around the turn of the century has settled down. Health economists like Martin Gaynor at Carnegie Mellon University say that that's not due to the new healthcare law.
Really, what's driving that slowdown is not any federal policy, state, local policy. It's not the things that the government is or isn't doing. It's really just the recession overall, the slowing in the economy.
And the other thing to keep in mind here is that most of the big parts of the health reform law have yet to take effect and won't for another year and a half. Some provisions don't even kick in until 2018. So it's going to be a while before we have a sense of how the law affects spending.
Now, how is cost figuring into Supreme Court arguments?
Well, healthcare's out-of-control costs underlie the whole movement for reform, but the court's concentrating on legal questions. For example, the legality of the individual mandate. Can the government require everyone to buy insurance? Or can the issues in the reform law be separated? Would a ruling that the insurance mandate is unconstitutional mean that the rest of the law would have to be scrapped? So these are the kinds of issues that we're going to hear over the next 3 days, 6 hours total, and we expect a decision from the court in June.
Marketplace's John Dimsdale. Thanks.
Thank you.
Now, let's do the numbers. Global markets are mixed this morning. Here in the U.S., teenagers pushed The Hunger Games to a couple of box office records. The movie brought in more than $200 million, making it the biggest opening ever for a non-sequel film. And on Friday, the Dow finished up, closing at 13,080.
Get Marketplace's top headlines, podcasts, and special features delivered right to your inbox each day. Subscribe to the Midday Update newsletter at marketplace.org.
Now to higher ed, the for-profit kind. Apollo Group, which owns the University of Phoenix, is expected to announce earnings today. And analysts, well, they aren't expecting big things. The company's stock has already been downgraded. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Ginzer explains why.
People who follow Apollo's stock are lowering their expectations a lot. Citigroup analyst James Samford cut his estimate of earnings per share for fiscal 2013 by 18%. Why? For-profit colleges are facing tough competition from traditional brick-and-mortar universities, which are setting up their own online long-distance degree programs.
People are choosing the branded traditional school versus the for-profit school. And obviously Apollo is the largest player, so they have probably the most to lose.
New federal rules are also putting pressure on the for-profit colleges. The rules are meant to keep the school's students from defaulting on their loans. Kevin Kinzer teaches education at the State University of New York at Albany. He's studied the for-profit school's decline.
They were in these double-digit enrollment boosts, and we've certainly seen the end of that.
The Apollo Group stock is down 20% just since the end of February. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Now on to another story about the business of education. It's been 10 years since the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School opened a satellite campus in San Francisco. To mark the occasion, the business school has moved to a bigger and shinier facility. As Charlotte Bear reports, it's part of Wharton's plan to attract more MBA students from the Bay Area's tech industry.
Students like Michael Sinkula are exactly why the Wharton School set up a shiny new shop in San Francisco.
I have a company here in the Silicon Valley, and since I started the company, I wasn't willing to leave the company and go to an MBA school.
There are lots of Sinkulas out here, with years of experience working in startups, but little idea how to take businesses to the next level, especially going public. Wharton is betting demand for its executive MBA program is big enough to supply a steady stream of students willing to pay nearly $175,000 for a degree. That includes tuition, fees, food, lodging, and lots of bells and whistles.
So you'll see here we have study rooms with the technology embedded. We've got Skype cameras, high-speed internet. The whole floor is wireless, so we all have iPads.
These guys are basically coming to where the money is.
That's Tim Beharin. He's a high-tech industry analyst in Silicon Valley.
Wharton operates as a business, not just a business school. So the idea of growing the campus back east is fine. But if you have an opportunity to tap into a demand for MBAs, you look for the region that has that greatest demand. And at the moment, it's probably here in Silicon Valley.
He says the Valley is full of sad stories about startups that failed because they didn't have the right management. So this time around, venture capitalists are looking for companies whose execs have MBAs. Bernadette Burt is COO of the school. She says expanding Wharton isn't just about making money. It's also about making connections.
You know, we have our students with us for 24 months, and then we have alumni for life. So now the number of alumni that we have coming from this region and from these kind of companies, it's immeasurable.
In other words, the bigger the network of Wharton grads in Silicon Valley, the cozier the school's relationship with some of the country's fastest-growing companies and their very rich founders. For Marketplace, I'm Charlotte Baer in Silicon Valley.
And finally, to the Arab Shooting Championships in Kuwait, where a Kazakhstan shooter won a gold medal. And instead of playing the country's national anthem, the event organizers played the spoof anthem from the movie Borat instead.
Kazakhstan number one exporter of the Dacian.
The organizers apologized and said the mistake was unintentional. They played the correct national anthem afterward. In Los Angeles, I'm Adrienne Hill. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.